Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is another comic book creator content conversation. I'm joined with Chad Bokelman from the Lantern Cast. He's been doing this for a really, really long time, so it's great to have him on the show. We're just going to talk about how he got started, you know, what the Lantern Cast is all about. It's a great podcast, and you know, we've had a lot of conversations recently with a lot of different content creators, and people have different reasons for doing it. And I think it's a valid conversation these days. You know, the whole debate on comics journalism and all that kind of stuff. So, Chad, welcome to the show. Great to have you. Why don't we dive in by you telling everybody kind of what the Lantern Cast is all about?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me, and I'm glad to be here. Thanks for that. So, yeah, the Lantern Cast. So started up 12 years ago. There was a guy named Jim Ford and then another guy named Dan Kurtzky. And they were some of your listeners, maybe yourself, you're familiar with Comic Geek Speak.
Oh, yeah.
Comic Geek Speak had forums back in the day, and those forums are just a great place. And Jim wanted a place for... you know, he wanted a Green Lantern podcast, but there was none. So he found somebody and created one. You know, honestly, I hadn't read comics that much at the time. I had, I'll just get into my origin a little bit, but my origin with comics is as a kid, I had like 5 or 6 issues, and they were the second issue of a Magnus the Robot Fighter and Nexus crossover, Marvel Chillers number 1, which is the first appearance of Modred the Mystic, Miss Marvel number 1, a reprint of Giant Size X-Men number 1, and Union number 0. Those were my five or so comics that I had as a kid. I didn't start reading comics until after high school. Actually, I was wandering a Borders bookstore back when Borders was still a thing, and I picked up the second volume of the Black and White Showcase Presents trade, the Green Lantern. I grabbed that, and then I also grabbed something called Green Lantern Rebirth, and I devoured that in one night. So I went online and I went looking for podcasts, and I found the Comic Geek Speak, and one of their ads was for the Lantern Cast, and I started listening to it. One of their first episodes was about the Rage of the Red Lanterns Final Crisis one-shot special, and that was the first regular issue I picked up at a comic book store that was on stands at the time. So I basically started listening right around the time that they got started, and then they, you know, I became a regular listener, gave feedback. Next thing you know, I'm doing a segment called the Larfleeze Report, where I go over all the merchandise that's being coming out, and my knowledge is increasing and increasing. And then Dan has to step down for a little bit for personal reasons, so I become one of the rotating co-hosts. And then after a while, Dan comes back. I'm one of the regular co-hosts. Now there's 3 of us. Jim and Dan get tired of doing this. You know, Jim's got a wife and kids. Dan's been doing this a long time. They decide to turn it on over to a next generation. And the 3 of us all decide that the best person to bring on would be my current co-host, Mark Marble, who would come on for a while. And now Mark and I have been doing it for 8 of the 12 years the podcast has been around. So we've been doing it longer than the founders of the show have. So it's interesting. We're a long-running podcast about Green Lantern, obviously, but we're also one of the few podcasts out there who has kind of like a legacy story now. Like, where there's a first generation and now there's a second generation. So
yeah, that's really interesting. What do you think it was that sucked you into comics, you know, in the first place? Cause it's, you know, sounds like you know, obviously with just a very few amount, and then all of a sudden, you know, you discover this forum, and then, I mean, was it just the new medium that was something new to try?
I would think so. I would also think a sense of community really helped. You know, I'm writing questions into the Lantern Cast back as an early listener, and they're answering on air. You know, I'm hearing my question be read. I am learning from them as I'm listening to them. You know, I think a I don't I think a non-surprising disproportionate amount of us were geeks growing up, and you know, a sense of community really pulls us into something when somebody, you know, wants to talk to us and be around us and have, you know, have friends and just, you know, this big group of people to share a common interest. So that definitely helps stoke the fire. But, you know, I always enjoyed superheroes. I call it the "you'll believe a man can fly" moment. I think a lot of people had that with the early Superman movie. I had my "you'll believe a man can fly" moment with the first Spider-Man film. I remember watching that in theaters, and I remember that music swelling at the end when the credits rolled. And I remember sort of slowly standing up as a teenager. I was carrying my shoulders a little higher, and part of me wanted to jump on the balcony and just sort of like leap down and impress the girls. And you know what I mean? This stupid stuff you imagine in your head as a teenager. So that sort of stuff just sucked me in. But I think, you know, it wasn't just comics. I think it was Green Lantern that sucked me in, because it's just with Batman, millions of dollars, billions of dollars, and you have to have this tragic backstory and devote mind, body, and soul to this objective. And Superman, you have to be an alien under a yellow sun. And Flash, this magical combination of lightning and chemicals at the same time, and blah, 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 blah. But Green Lantern, all you had to do was be capable of overcoming the things that held you back. And when somebody, you know, and I'm not going to sit here and say like I had the movie version of being a geek in school where shoved in lockers and constantly beat up, but I had enough of an experience to feel like I was an outcast and wasn't somebody someone wanted to be around. So the idea that if I could just get past the things I felt were holding me back and just live my life anyways, that was heroic enough. I think, you know, even though I found the idea after high school, it was enough of an emotional pull to me. And then you get into the fact that I start reading during the Geoff Johns era, where a lot of it is about kind of tangentially emotions, because then you get the emotional spectrum. So there's more to it than just, you know, wham, bam, punch. So.
Yeah. So interesting. You know, part of me wants to go, okay, let's talk Green Lantern, man, because there's so much there. And then the other part of me is just like, well, but let's talk nuts and bolts. You know, that's
no, for sure.
So maybe we'll try to do a little bit of both. So let's focus on the podcast aspect first. So yeah. So interesting. You're taking over a podcast for somebody. So you didn't necessarily have to start it from the ground up, but when you did take over in terms of, you know, the other two guys step back, what was that experience like? I mean, now you're not just, because it's one thing to just, that's the easiest thing to do in the world, right? Like come onto a podcast and talk about things you love. It's a whole nother thing when you're keeping the lights on, you're producing stuff, you got to worry about RSS feeds and SEO and all that kind of thing. So was it a gradual process for you? Did you get thrown in the deep end of the pool? Talk to us a little bit about what that was like.
I got thrown into the deep end of the pool. Jim jumped on a Skype call with me and walked me through, because a lot of modern podcasters have it easy with feeds and stuff like that, feed burners and things like that. But Lantern Cast actually still updates via TXT files, .txt files.
Wow.
Yeah. So we're still doing that only because I don't know how to get the show onto a different posting medium or, you know, whatever that may be, without losing what's already there. Because if you go into iTunes, well, Apple Podcasts now, everything back to episode zero is there. So how do we change the feed source without losing everything? You know, how do we keep, and I honestly, it's when you got a podcast that's been on the air for 12 years, you don't really want to risk it. So I'll just put up with the TXT files. Jim got on a Skype call and taught me how to do the TXT stuff. Gave me a little bit of just sort of how to use basic tools in Audacity. Which was good, but at the time they had the Lantern Cast had an editor who was based out of Ireland, which is named James. And James was on the Lantern Cast for three or four episodes after Mark and I took it over. So it gave me enough time to sort of just play around with Audacity and get the idea of how it worked. Because my day job, I do tech support related stuff. I've been doing tech support related stuff for 10, 12 years now. So I'm the kind of person, you put me in front of software, don't give me an instruction manual, just let me play with it. I'm going to figure it out. And that's sort of what I did. I just had to turn my tech eye towards Audacity and figure it out. And because we updated by TXT files, then I have to figure out, okay, I just updated that TXT file. Why am I not seeing the episode in iTunes? Okay, well, let me pull up the file and I got to sit there and read. Did I put a dash or some sort of punctuation that it's not reading? I got to try. Okay, I put an ampersand in there. Let me spell out the words. All right. Did it post now? No. All right. Back to the drawing, you know? Whereas now so many, and I do it because I have other podcasts, you know, where all you got to do is upload to a source and then create a post on a website and bam, it's there. So I wish we could do that, but I got thrown into the deep end and tried to figure it out. And it wasn't until relatively recently, at least in the year 2020, early 2020, that Mark had to get thrown into the deep end, actually, just by happenstance. We had always planned on, you know, getting on a session, him and I, to, you know, let me teach him how to do it so he knows all the stuff. But then I got, I had to go to the ER in early May, and it turns out I had diverticulitis. So, you know, I'm out, you know, in the hospital getting, you know, some infections taken care of and things like this before they can, you know, start all the other processes. And then Mark, you know, suddenly finds himself bereft of a co-host and who's doing the posting. So Jim had to teach Mark how to do it. It's just one of those things where, you know, man, you can find time to record and think up ideas, but like more and more logistics of the show that you have to make time for. You're like, we can always do it later. Yep. And it just became later. And now Mark is actually the one who has been editing and posting the show, and he's been doing a great job with that. And he hasn't asked for my help yet. So he's, you know, I wonder if he might feel Chad's been doing the editing for a long time, but he's been doing a lot of other stuff on his end too. We share workloads, so.
Yeah, and so, you know, you mentioned earlier about how you've been doing it for twice as long as the original host. What, I mean, it sounds like such a simple question, but often can have a complex answer. Why do you think you guys have kept it going? What is it about creating content? You know, because it's one thing to get sucked in. We can all just enjoy the books and kind of relax. But I know I'm not making any money doing this. You know, it cost me a significant amount at the end of the year between, you know, media hosting and, you know, just all kinds of other services that I have to pay for. I just paid for my website domain for another year, which is not cheap, you know. And so I'm sure you're kind of in the same boat. So, you know, it's got to be more than just a love of Green Lantern, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a love of community at the end of the day. And I enjoy talking to Mark. You know, Mark likes to, there's a famous quote, I can't remember what it was, but Mark is fond of saying a sort of adaptation of this quote. I hate recording. I love having recorded, you know? I think up until the point where we start recording, you're like, oh man, I gotta make time for this. I gotta make the mic, make sure the mic's set up. All right, we gotta get on. Did I do my prep reading for the episode I'm about to read? Am I the one recapping this episode? Did I write my recap? Do I want to just go about, okay, I didn't really particularly enjoy this issue. We don't want a super short episode. I gotta find a little bit of content, something to talk about. You know, it's honestly community. I enjoy talking to Mark, and I feel like he enjoys talking to me. I don't want to toot my own horn there, but we wouldn't have been doing this for 8 years if we didn't hate each other. So, and you know, it's the community, quite honestly. That's the only reason we keep doing it, because you talk about struggling to make money off of this sort of a thing. Imagine being us. You have a sort of a platform here where you can talk more generally about the scope of the field. Imagine having a 12-year podcast from about a property from a specific publisher and a specific property from that specific publisher. Good luck finding advertisers that want to sponsor you or come onto the show and have you run ads or whatever. Like, you know, what's their entry level there? Really, the only thing that we got going in our favor is the longevity of the show. So it can be difficult to find that sort of stuff, but I think we just both really enjoy doing it. It's sometimes very difficult to keep going. And I say that for two reasons. One, because sometimes what you're reading sucks and you feel a desire to try and be positive because no one wants to tune in and listen to people just complain about something for hours. They get enough of that on the internet day to day to day. But at the same time, we're not going to be disingenuous. Like if we hate something, I'm not going to, you know, spend any time on it, but neither myself nor Mark like the current Morrison run of Green Lantern. It's a wonderful art book. Liam Sharp is doing fantastic on it. But as you know, Morrison can be a divisive writer. He can be somebody who you just like, what did I just read? And you just feel utterly lost. And that's how we feel when we read that. So, but that's the Green Lantern book out now right now, other than Far Sector, which we actually really enjoy. So that helps things. But how do we cover something that we don't like that's been going for X amount of issues from one of the biggest creators? Like, what do we do there? And it can also be difficult in terms of feedback. The Lantern Cast has been on the air for over 12 years, because the anniversary is in November. Right now, I just happen to have Twitter up. We have 861 followers, you know, 12 years. And not that big of a social media presence. You don't want to pay for followers. Nobody wants that. But it's also disheartening when, you know, because I've been watching the CW verse. I love the CW universe that they've created for DC over there. And then there'll be these podcasts that pop up in response to a new show being created. Like when Supergirl got created, somebody created a podcast out of it. Great. Wonderful. You're passionate about it. Let's go. I'd love to listen to your show. But like within a day or two of that podcast being announced and having a social media presence, they had like 2,000 plus followers. And I was like, it's hard not to get a comparison hangover. I think it's hard not to get a comparison hangover with any amount of social media, whether you're just you or whether you run a business like a podcast. So it's hard not to look at your fellows in the industry and go, oh my God, we're 12 years old. Like we're here, we're established. Come on. It can be disheartening, but enjoying talking to each other and enjoying talking to the community that does interact with us just keeps us going. And regardless of what the content is that's coming out, we still love the character of Green Lantern. And what's great is you have 7,200 plus of them to choose from. So it doesn't really matter what's going on with Hal. And the character has been around as of last year, 80 years. And if you don't like what's happening now, I haven't read every single appearance of Green Lantern. Maybe I'll go back and read some of that.
Yeah, it's a good point to make. And a couple of those things that you said really resonate. Obviously, you know, no matter what it is that you're reading, you know, obviously you guys focus on one corner of the DC universe, but you know, something you always struggle with. Publishers reach out to me or creators reach out to me. Hey, we want to come on the show and talk about this or that. And you read it and it's not very good. Like you said, I try not to cover things that I don't like because there's enough good content coming out. You know, why focus on the negative? But people expect you to cover things like Future State, you know, and like you said, you can't be disingenuous. You've got to walk that fine line, because if you're just out there complaining all the time, the publishers aren't going to give you the time of day. The creators are going to be like, I'm not going to come on this show and be ambushed. So you have to, you know, you got to at the same time keep your integrity, you know, because you have at least I feel an obligation of my listeners to, you know, tell it straight, not just going to be a shill, that's what's interesting. You know, I mentioned earlier about sort of comics journalism. Is that even a thing? Certainly a decade ago, maybe 15 years ago, you had sites like Comic Book Resources and Newsarama, Comic Alliance, where everything was much more objective. And then I don't know if it's because comics became the center of pop culture and there's so much more money involved. I mean, I suspect that's what it is. Now all of a sudden these sites are being bought up by these bigger media, internet media conglomerates and what have you. And now they're not so objective. Now it's just a way to regurgitate press releases and everything's great. And, you know, so I definitely sympathize with the whole thing about the Morrison. I'm not a big Morrison guy myself, so I get it. Liam Zafran, I know Liam, and yeah, I buy the book for the art basically. And I honestly, I don't think I've read past issue 6 maybe of season 1.
Yeah, I mean, that's totally fair. And I think the thing is, like, we love sites like, I mean, you and I both had, and I know I don't know you that well, but we enjoyed sites like Newsarama and CBR back in the day. It was a home to go to get the information that we needed for the specific thing that we wanted. And now it's just full of clickbait.
Yep.
It's really all it is. And you're talking to someone who wanted to be a journalist for a long, long time. So I know clickbait aggravates people, and I'm not going to sit here and say like, oh, I'm more aggravated than the entire rest of the world, blah, blah, blah. But like wanting to be a journalist, clickbait has an like this air of it's personal to me. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. It hits me the wrong way. And CBR has done a really bad job about it. Newsarama was bad at it. It seems like they've gotten a little better, but you know, it can always go back down the rabbit hole. And it's just, you know, you get these, and they started taking advantage of the fans in terms of the posting controversial articles that they knew would get your clicks, top 5 list or whatever, that just threw in somebody to piss you off, or you know, whatever the case may be. And I could list off dozens of different examples, or we could go to their website right now and we could probably find some. But if I had the money, if these things that you and I did made income, I would quit my job and I would start a new nerd news media network where we could host podcasts, where somebody could be a liaison between publishers, where we could have articles out there that were positive but honest, or negative but honest, as long as, you know, people knew what they were talking about. I'm not an artist, so when I review a comic, I don't lean heavily on the art other than I liked it or I didn't like it. And if I didn't like it, I tried to give an example of a specific panel or something. You know, I say, look right here, doesn't his face look kind of weird? Like artistically, I don't know what they did that is wrong here, but something about that is hitting my eye wrong. I try to give an example, not just it's stupid, I don't like the style. And if you don't like the art throughout the entire book, then clearly the style isn't for you. There's a difference between the art sucks and this isn't a style that appeals to me. So, and there are people out there who don't know that difference, and just it's all horrible, don't pay this person any attention. And look, that's how I approach Morrison. Like I sometimes like what he does, and I a lot of times don't. Turns out his heavy thinking stuff isn't for me. I can point out some of the things more clearly, the issue that was all backward speak for some ridiculous reason, or when you read an issue and suddenly they're speaking in some sort of like high-minded old English and you're like, last issue we left Hal Jordan, he was in an 18-wheeler hitching a ride with someone, and now he's in a city with these humanoid birds. What the hell happened? You know, like I can point out those specific things, but that's how Morrison works. I can be mad at the series. I can say it frustrates me, but at the end of the day, it's not like Morrison hasn't played this card before. So I just don't happen to like what Morrison does. And I just buy the book now. It's an art book on my shelf. I open it up to see Liam's work because he does a great job consistently issue to issue. And what's really good about him working with Grant, just to go down that rabbit hole just for a quick second, is Grant's style, scattered style, his mind, whatever, allows Liam to go down so many different avenues. Because when you look at Green Lantern and Grant Morrison's run on it, Liam has expressed like 6 different styles, 8 different styles. Like, he has been allowed to just be unleashed in whatever, whether it's watercolor or whether it's, you know, a painted style, whether it's more traditional art, whether like backgrounds can be super heavy with this almost Kirby-esque detail, like, and so on and so forth. You can't not pick up Green Lantern and just appreciate the depths and the breadth of what Liam has been able to do on that book, which I don't know that another writer would have, I don't want to say allowed that, but for lack of a better term, I don't know that another writer would have allowed that on their book. Whereas Grant Morrison probably was like, oh, hell yeah, the more confusing, the better.
Yeah, I did find, I went back recently and I reread the first, I don't know, 4 or 5, because I was just reading it as it came out, you know, monthly. And then I did go back and tried to get back into it. And I read like the first 4 or 5. And I did find on the second read, it was a little more comprehensible, but obviously not enough for me to get sucked in and be reading it on a weekly basis. So I do agree, but that is something that's so interesting. It's probably part of the reason you guys have been able to go so long. You yourself said, you know, if you're not liking what's coming out now, there's any era, you know, any number of eras of Green Lantern to go back. So let's start with this. This is probably a question you get a lot, but if you had to pick a favorite Green Lantern, just one, is there one that you know, stands out above the rest for you?
The answer used to be Kyle Rayner, and he is a close second. The answer now is Alan Scott. Mm. When you go back into, and this is something I found even early on in my fandom, as I started learning about Green Lantern, listening to Jim and Dan, I found myself also growing more and more curious about the history of comic books in general. So much so that now I have, it's not an original copy, but I have a copy of Seduction of the Innocent. I have, you know, the 10 Cent Plague by David Haidu. I have the Man of Tomorrow. I can't remember the name of it. I have a lot of comic history books. So when you go back and learn about the origins of these characters from a fictional standpoint and from a reality standpoint, and you, we have a good friend of the show is Jackie Nodell. And Jackie Nodell is the granddaughter of Martin Nodell, the man who created Green Lantern. And she told us the story of her father went into the city and was pitching a story, and they said, hey, come back. You know, this is when Batman and Superman were obviously getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And they said, hey, come back when you have something. So he was taking the train home. And as he was sitting there just sketching up some ideas, he saw a man down on the tracks. And this is back, you know, obviously this is early days, so it's not like there's a lot of electric lights everywhere or whatever, but he's waiting on the train and he sees someone waving a red lantern on the tracks to keep the train that is coming into the station out until whatever needs to be done has been done. And then he sees him waving a green lantern to tell him I'll go. And so he just writes down the words Green Lantern. And with his own, you know, influences into sort of like the Greek style. That's why you see Alan with the sort of boots that kind of lace up around his calves, with his influences with, you know, feudal Japan and things like that. In terms of, if you've ever read the original story, you know, part of the pathway the Starheart goes through is Japan and all that stuff. So he just comes up with this character called Green Lantern, and it's just out of the blue one day, and I just really like that. You know, how many of us have had these random ideas? It's like, wouldn't it be cool if, and then you maybe jot it down and nothing ever comes of it. But what if one of those random ideas came something that lasted for 80 years? Like, holy crap, that's insane. And over the years, I have gotten to know not just Jackie, but a bunch of the Nodells, so much so that the Nodells are friends of mine. And they sent me stuff signed by their grandfather, like just personally. I didn't ask for it. I didn't pay for any of it. They just sent me a bunch of stuff. And that meant the world to me because I'd been on eBay before going, maybe I can buy something signed by him. Wouldn't that be great? Because unfortunately, I got into comics after he passed. But to have his own family send it to me, that was, you know, you asked earlier, why do you do it? That's one of the reasons you keep doing it. You know, like I may not get the Lantern Cast may not get a ton of feedback. It may only have 800 plus followers on Twitter, but like the Nodels know you and they appreciate what you're doing enough to send a little bit of what they have. Cause they don't have a lot, you know, otherwise they, you know, continue selling and have like a side business on that. They don't have a lot, and what little they have, they want to keep for themselves as a memory of their grandfather. But to have them say, thank you for doing this and send something like that, that's everything. That's almost all the validation you need. Right. So, yeah, man. I forgot what the original question was.
It explains. Totally understand why he'd be your favorite. Is it all versions of him? Like, did you like the Earth 2 version, you know, that Nicholas Scott designed? And then.
So first of all, Nicholas Scott is a fantastic artist. She's the reason I'm picking it. So you mentioned Future State a minute ago, picking up obviously Justice League because, you know, the Far Sector Green Lantern is involved in there. I'm also picking it up because Ragman is a part of the backup story in Justice League Dark. And that's a poster of Ragman. I'm a huge Ragman fan. I got a blog about Ragman, but anyways, and then obviously I'm picking up Future State, Green Lantern, and one or two other titles, and that was it. But I started picking up Nightwing because she is doing the art on that. It's like, I gotta have that. The Future State, or they're sorry, the New 52 Earth 2 Green Lantern, I was concerned about, and you know, Lantern Cast has been on 12 years, so you can go find the episode where we talked about that news actually at this point. I was concerned about it, not because they made him gay, but because I was concerned of like the idea is, are they doing it right? Are they doing it well? Are they doing it carefully? Or is this, we need some diversity and it's just change for the sake of change. And you and I, you know, we attended that thing with Talent Talk and Dan DiDio, and he mentioned change for the sake of change being a bad thing. So, and you know, clearly the higher ups at DC don't want that sort of, but it was handled very well. And the idea that, and when I read that, because it was issue 3 that his origin was revealed, the idea that he's on the train and he's going to propose to the guy that he loves, and then the train crashes, and then you get the sort of origin that you usually get with Alan and, you know, the lantern speaking and or the light speaking, the idea that that it said like something to the effect of, you know, we need a conduit, something meaningful, and the ring that he was going to propose with is the ring that becomes his Green Lantern ring. That was so well done. I didn't read that series all the way till its cancellation, but the origin and how it was done and how it was drawn and colored and everything, that was enough for me. I was like, okay, they did this. They did it right. I stopped reading Earth 2 for other reasons, you know, just other story reasons, other character choices, things like that. I thought Jay Garrick's costume looked ridiculous. that runner's helmet, whatever that was. I have enjoyed most all aspects of what they have done with Alan. And he's also been off the table for so long. I just want to see where they go next, man. Like, there's so much potential in that family. And because you have Alan, you have Harlequin, not Harley Quinn, Harlequin. You have Obsidian, you have Jade, you have his family of the JSA. You have the next generation of the All-Star Squadron and the next generation of Justice Society. And there's just, I always like the idea of Alan being an elder statesman. I enjoyed his appearances in the Kyle Rayner run where Hal's gone. John doesn't have a ring, you know, Kyle's alone, but Alan's there and he can kind of, he's his linchpin to understand the legacy that he's inherited. and almost Alan is almost a father figure to Kyle for a while in that run. So there's just so much possibility now that you can do with Alan. And I want to see him do it.
Did you read the Tales of the Dark Multiverse, Crisis on Infinite Earths? Because that has heavily, an Alan Scott story, basically. What are your thoughts on that one? If you read it?
I did read it. We will be doing an episode on the second wave of Tales of the Dark Multiverse stuff soon. I know Dan, one of the original founders of the show, I know he did not like it. I didn't like what they did to him. I didn't know like how they characterized him. But at the same time, it's the Dark Multiverse. Were you expecting something cheery when you read that story? Were you expecting someone not to turn down a path that you didn't like? Because this is the stuff under the froth of the multiverse that doesn't rise to the top. This is the bad stuff. I didn't like it. I didn't like what they did to him, but again, we're so starved for Alan Scott content. I was just like, bring it on. Yep. Okay. I'm fine with it. Look, I got to see Alan. I got to see him drawn very well. You know, let's do it. And then he had the story in the 80th anniversary thing that they put out, and that was very well done as well.
Yeah, and then we had an Obsidian sighting the first week of Future State. I want to say it was in the Harley Quinn book. Did you read that?
I haven't read Harley Quinn. I am planning to read at least the first issue of most all of the Future State books digitally in some way, shape, or form, just to kind of get a taste of what they're doing. I know, aren't Jade and Obsidian pictured on the Infinite Frontier double page thing that's showing online? Yeah.
Yeah. So that one shot, I expect them to show up, but I'm pretty sure. Yeah. Obsidian showed it. It was the last page reveal of one of them. I think it was Harley Quinn, but yeah, basically this, whatever this big bad is, they had him in this containment thing, and it was like, they were using him as some sort of energy source. So I'm curious where that'll lead, but let's talk about Future State Green Lantern. Obviously that's the one for you. So, I mean, I'm a pretty big Green Lantern fan as well. And, I have to say that for me, the big highlight was the Jessica Cruz story in the middle by Ryan Caddy, who, you know, I'm not just saying that because I know Ryan, he's a great guy, but to me, that was the one that stood out. I mean, I know a lot of people like the Guy Gardner story, and that's fine. I'm not a big Guy Gardner fan, but the main story didn't care for various reasons. And, you know, you can go listen to our Future State Week 2 spotlight, everybody, if you want to dive into that. But for me, yeah, the standout being that Jessica Cruz issue, especially because she's got a TV show coming. So that feels like a missed opportunity. That feels like that should have been the main story. Obviously, you want to promote Jeffrey Thorne. He's going to be writing the new Green Lantern title when March or I guess April rolls around. I don't think it was actually solicited for March, but I can't remember. You want to lean into the writer that's going to be writing the Green Lantern story, and I get that. But what were your thoughts on Future State Green Lantern?
Cover and variant cover. I've got them both. That's actually the very next episode of the Lantern Cast we're recording. So, talking about it a little bit, I'm one of those who really enjoyed the Guy Gardner story. I mean... It's Guy. they didn't not do him justice. I'm just flipping through now to remind myself of everything that's gone on in this. But I liked the Guy story. Who's it? Clayton Henry is the artist. I really enjoyed the art that was. I like the whole thing starts off with him having a ring construct conversation with Badge. And tell me again why I'm taking orders from a squirrel. Eat a wormy nut, Gardner. I mean, they're having this thing back and forth go between them. It's interesting. And I'll say, you know, it's interesting because I thought my problem with the Jeffrey Thorne, John Stewart side of this book was I don't care for stories about lanterns without rings. But the Guy Gardner story is largely a lantern without a ring story. So I'm going to have to dig a bit deeper into understanding why I don't care much for the Jeffrey Thorne thing. I think there's more of an opportunity coming when he actually inherits the title, because this is future state Green Lantern, and maybe we'll see what he does with John with the ring. I think the characterization of John in here is solid. But you gave me Nort. I don't care for Nort. I don't think a lot of people care for Nort. Trying to make Nort a badass or serious just hits people wrong. Did you ever read Threshold back in the new 52? So Threshold was a book of insanity. I won't even go. It was so much so that people wanted us to cover it as the Lantern Cast because it had a lantern in it. And we kept putting it off and putting it off and putting it off. And we made a big joke episode out of it for Halloween. It was our Halloween episode. You know, like, we're playing a trick on you. Here's something we hate. And you know, you're going into it, it's going to suck. And we're just going to just everybody. We're forewarning you. This is going to be the episode where we're unleashed. So you can find the Threshold thing. But this story with Jon Stewart reminds me a lot of Threshold in some ways. The random alien characters, the random fighting, the random sort of situation we're thrown into that we don't know what's going on. I did like, you know, seeing some Kilowog action in here. I'm curious. I think the Kilowog stuff probably saved it for me, because you know, you got to find out what happened, Johnny, find out what happened to the core, if anyone else is still alive, you know, that sort of a thing. I want to know. I'm curious what happened. What's got them fighting? Salak is in this and is a bat. He's been known as being like sort of the techie background organizer, man behind the scenes sort of thing. You don't really often see Salak kicking a lot of butt. And here he is front and center with John. So that's cool. But the Jessica Cruz story was good. We got to see some Yellow Lanterns. We got to see Lysa. It's been a while since we've seen Lysa. I know we've got Ugg and Lo in here, but Lysa, the keeper of the Book of the Black, is always a cool looking character. She's from the same planet as one of my favorite Legion of Superheroes members, Shadow Lass. So, and she looks like Shadow Lass. She dresses like Shadow Lass. So I've just been waiting for DC to do something that sort of connects the two. Even though I'm not usually a fan of the forced connections between characters just to, you know, do all that, but whatever. This whole book is Lanterns Without a Ring, and the Jessica Cruz story was good, even though the ending changes that a little bit, and the Guy Gardner story was good. It's just, man, you know, you caught me. We got this as our episode next week. I was going to reread it. And I was going to, obviously, I'm going to have to dig deep into understanding why I don't like the Jeffrey Thorne story. Because I thought it was just simply a Lantern Without a Ring story. That's, I don't like that. But that's not the case.
Yeah, I kind of felt like, I don't know, I didn't buy that they were able to stand up to the Coons, who are, you know.
Warriors.
A warrior race from birth. And here you have a ragtag group and they're holding them off. For me, you know, I was picking up Green Lantern off the stands, you know, from time Hal quit, you know, in the 174 or whatever issue it was. And then John Stewart took over, and this was a different John Stewart. This wasn't, oh, I was used to be a Marine John Stewart. This was, I grew up in the projects and became an architect John Stewart, who's so wildly different. I almost wish that they'd just come up with a different character, because I'm, to me, the old John Stewart was better. That just, you know, maybe it's nostalgia. Maybe it's just, so I don't care for the whole Marine gun-ho kind of background for me. So I guess we'll see. My favorite Green Lantern is Hal Jordan. And so I find it troublesome that Jeffrey Thorne has gone on record multiple times just railing against Hal Jordan on social media, saying he's literally said he's the worst comic book character ever created. I worry about that. And granted, maybe we're going to get multiple Green Lantern titles. It certainly seems like Jeffrey Thorne's title, from what we've heard, you know, we're going to get Joe Mullen, the Far Sector Green Lantern. We're going to get Teen Lantern. We're going to get John Stewart. So no mention of Guy, no mention of Jessica Cruz, no mention of Hal Jordan yet. I mean, remains to be seen. But what are your thoughts on that Infinite Frontier title? Are you liking the direction it's headed? Are you worried at all? Are you just trying to keep an open mind?
Well, I mean, we've seen some solicits and pages of the what's coming for Green Lantern. We saw it was a Teen Lantern standing in front of one of the Guardians, kind of floating on a panel or page, rather. Other lanterns looking up at that scene. The art looks good. It looks like rings are going to be heavily involved. So I'm just glad to see lanterns with the rings. I'd be concerned if this was we're going to depower John in the core with the first two issues and we're going to have, but I don't think that's the idea. I think the idea with Future State is the same idea they had with Future's End. You know, let's just take a peek into the future and see what's possible. We don't necessarily have to go there. I'm liking where we're heading based on that. I too shared your concerns about Jeffrey Thorne's comments about Hal Jordan. We had an episode about that. We talked all about that. And Jeffrey Thorne did release a statement that was posted on sites like CBR and things like that. And basically his whole thing was, there's a difference between what you say as a fan and what you say as a professional, and how you act as a fan and how you act as a professional. He didn't take the job to with the intention of shitting on Hal Jordan. And nor would he, nor would DC probably let him. It's just the story that he, you know, just like anybody, you have to pitch stories to DC. You have to pitch stories to the editors. His pitch with John Stewart happened to be one that they liked. It doesn't involve Hal. So, and if Hal shows up or needs to show up, he'll do what he needs to do to make him the Hal we've always read and understood. It's still disconcerting, but, I'm looking for it. He says he's super passionate about John Stewart. I don't think it's a bad thing to have somebody who's very passionate about somebody writing that somebody. And I'm excited to see where it goes, because like you, I'm not that thrilled with John Stewart's direction. Honestly, I'm not that thrilled with John Stewart as a character. And that's only because, keep in mind, I have his first appearance. Like, you know, I care about the character and his connection to the mythos and what he means. But to me, John Stewart has always been a character who has been defined by the things that have happened to him rather than who he was. The things that have happened to him being, you know, the angry black architect, you know, that's going to be, if we're going to write him, we're going to write him this way. Zanshi, the destruction of Zanshi. Oh, that moment of ego. He's going to be the down and out character who's depressed about the actions he's taken and hesitant to make big decisions because it could lead to death or whatever. Or sorrowful for other reasons, like the death of Cat Matui in the first issue of the Action Comics Weekly series at the hands of Carol Ferris, Star Sapphire. He's going to be down and out about the loss of Cat Matui, but also angry at Hal and how he let Carol go, and vengeful against Carol. The military man. We're going to display him as the staunch Marine. You know, he's been defined as these very certain things for a lot of his publication history. And I am looking forward to getting a multifaceted John Stewart. I want a complex person. I want somebody who has more sides to him than just the Marine, more sides to him than just the architect, more sides to him than just the moments in his past that he can't let go of. I want somebody who's more in depth. They're one of my favorite, if not my favorite Green Lantern stories of all time, was the first time we saw Kyle take on the mantle of Ion. And this was issues 144 through 150. And in that story, one of the things you get revealed is, you know, John Stewart is crippled at that time. He's in a wheelchair. And Kyle, with all of his godlike power, takes a look at John and says, "There's nothing wrong with you physically, John. there was a little bit of power somehow somewhere in your spine from Parallax or whatever, I have removed and reabsorbed that. There's nothing physically that should be impacting you. It's mental, like your therapist said. So one issue of this arc, we focus on John Stewart and is in a therapy session and he's going through things and he's talking about a car crash that happened when he was younger. And then this car crash, he decided to take his grandmother's car out for a joyride, and it crashed. And he's upset because the puppy that was in the back seat died, and that was his fault. And as you go through, puppy, I think his name was Rose. As you go through, Rose died. Rose wasn't a puppy. Rose was his little sister. And he's been carrying that guilt all his life and he's been blocking that memory and all of these little things. So that was a powerful moment. I was like, oh shit, this isn't Angry Black Architect. This isn't Marine. This isn't, it's a loss-based story, but finally something else about John that builds him up as a character. And if Jeffrey Thorne loves John Stewart the way he says he does, then let's see it. I'm ready. Give me something more about John Stewart to care about. So,
yeah, I mean, I tend to agree with you. I don't know who, and I think that's part of the reason why I always go back to, I fall back to that, you know, architect John Stewart, you know, walking around with a chip on his shoulder because he grew up in the projects. At least he had an identity. I feel like ever since they swapped it out to this Marine one. Yeah. I don't even know who the guy is. It's all, even his demeanor changes based on, you know, who's ever writing him. I did feel like Robert Venditti was kind of getting there, but his book was such an ensemble book that we didn't really have enough time with John to really see. And now, you know, obviously we're moved on to the Morrison stuff. So, you know, who knows? That is another interesting thing about the whole idea and concept of Green Lantern. You look at other characters that have been around for such a long time, you know, Wonder Woman, Batman, Superman, and they have defined eras, you know, Wonder Woman, maybe less so, but when you look at Batman, I pretty much think ever since the 1989 Michael Keaton Batman movie, we've been in the modern era of Batman. Batman has just become the uber character of the DCU. It's all one era. Superman, you could kind of say the same thing. You had the Byrne era that relaunched him. And then ever since then, we've sort of been in I guess the Triangle era would be considered an era. And then everything else after that's just kind of, you know, it merges all together. Green Lantern's had so many distinct eras that you can go back and look at, you know, certain times. Obviously the hard traveling heroes, and then, you know, what came after that one, the Dave Gibbons art, and then, you know, moving into the era. Yeah, exactly. The era of Hal Jordan with the gray hair, and then come to find out, oh, he was infected with Parallax. And then you had the Kyle Rayner era. And then that, you know, eventually leading into Rebirth, the Geoff Johns era was huge and impactful. And then Venditti and then now. So do you have a favorite era? I mean, have you gone back and sampled things from different eras? Like and why do you think that Green Lantern does have so many distinct, I mean, I feel like more so than anybody, there's clear delineations between, you know, like Venditti, or, you know, John's left, Venditti came on. I mean, that's a clear break from what came before.
Yeah. I have sampled stuff from every era. I have not read every issue that Green Lantern's ever appeared in, or at the very least, even more specific, I haven't read every Green Lantern issue, as in, you know, proper titles. But I've sampled stuff from every era, and I know it sounds, whatever to say this, but I like them all. They have something for me in each of them. It's just, if I were to pick one, obviously, it's maybe cliche, but Green Lantern, Green Arrow, hard traveling heroes. And I'm showing, you know, just for those listening on audio based stuff, it's, Green Lantern, Green Arrow, number 85. Speedy Does Drugs. This is the issue, you know, historic, iconic cover. My ward is a junkie. And this is signed to me by Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams. This is my copy that I will never be able to sell, never can sell, because it's too Chad on the cover. But this is when, to me, this is so many things. And I, there's a spinoff that we have on the Lantern Cast called Green Lantern Cast Presents Green Lantern Green Arrow that I do. And where I talk about not just this series, but why it's important, not just to Green Lantern, but to the comic industry. Because one of the things historic about this issue is that the code stamp is on it, because this helped change the comic book code from its original version. This series helped change the comic book code from its original version to what it became, and what Neil Adams has told me, he likes to use the phrase, what they did on Green Lantern and Green Arrow helped pull the fangs out of the Comics Code Authority. And the Green Lantern Green Arrow era of specifically Denny O'Neil, Neil Adams, because after Neil Adams left, it was Mike Grell and it became more spacey, cosmic, and whatever. Specifically, the Denny O'Neil, Neil Adams historic era is great and iconic to me for a great number of reasons. First of all, Julie Schwartz, who is one of my idols at DC Comics, who's obviously passed away a long time ago, but Julie Schwartz told Denny and Neil, basically, free reign, do what you want. Green Lantern sales are in the tank. Just do whatever you got. And Denny and Neil, who were like anybody in the late 60s, early 70s, you know, the hippies who want to change the world, they're gonna do it. So you tackle racism, you tackle drug use, you tackle overpopulation, you tackle all these things. So they started taking comics seriously. And that was one of the first times it went from and this is why I love the involvement of its place in comics history. The comics code is the reason that we got the Biff Bam Pow, campy, goofy rainbow Batman and Superman eating a bunch of hamburgers issues and all this sort of stuff, because we had to protect the children after the Senate subcommittee trials on juvenile delinquency and then the establishment of the comics code. But now all of a sudden Denny O'Neil and Neil Adams show up and they start taking comics a little bit more seriously, because Marvel's now on the scene and Marvel's being a little more realistic about what's happening. So they start doing this thing. And the first issue of that series is that iconic moment at the end where on the top of a roof in Star City, that black man says, I've seen Mr. Green Lantern. I've seen a lot what you've done for the purple skins and the orange skins. And somewhere out there, you did something for some red skins or whatever. Tell me, Mr. Green Lantern, what have you done for the black skins? You know, just all of a sudden this campy cosmic concept, this man with a magical wish ring got drugged down to street level and said, what have you done for us? You know, you've been out in space, where you been all this time? And I love that it tackled real problems. It made the character serious. It was drawn beautifully, Neil Adams at the height of his career. And it just changed comics. It changed the character. It changed the industry. It changed the series. You can say what you want about the series, and had some positive issues, had some not so great issues, whatever. But there is no denying the impact of the Green Lantern, Green Arrow era. And it just so perfectly, the comics, the DC comics industry and Green Lantern is a sheet of thick ice on the lake. And the more remembered eras of Green Lantern are like smaller rocks hitting the ice and causing a break that spreads out here, but it doesn't go all the way across the pond. The Green Lantern Green Arrow era is like dropping that bigger rock right in the middle of that ice, and it just splinters out and it doesn't break the whole pond, but every little crack of that hits another smaller spread. There's something in that era that touches every era of Green Lantern that has gone out from that moment forward. I love it. I love that series. I love it a lot. It's, You know, there's moments where Hal and Ollie are using very clearly 70s language. So if you read it today, you're like, well, that's, wow. Thanks, Grandpa, trying to sound, whoever's at DC Comics trying to sound like the kids today. There's no denying what that series was, what it accomplished.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. And I think it's part of what makes Hal such a great character, which is why I was surprised that I, you know, when Jeffrey Thorne came out and said what he said. So I guess we'll see. I'm very curious if Hal is just going to, if they're just going to put him on the back burner for now. You know, he certainly is front and center in the current The Green Lantern series. So if they decide to go the other direction, you know, it wouldn't be the first time. So I guess we'll see. But it's been great chatting with you, Chad. I really appreciate you taking the time as we're winding down here. Why don't you let everybody know where they can find the Lantern Cast, where they can find you on social media and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, so the Lantern Cast is basically everywhere that you can find podcasts. Although I know a lot of podcasters got the same email. Amazon Music is trying to get podcasts to put on their service. I haven't done that yet, but we're on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, all that stuff. Found us on a bunch of other random stuff too. Just search Lantern Cast, you'll find us. We're on Twitter and Facebook, as well as our social medias. So you know, you can find us Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, mostly on Twitter. That's where I tend to be most active. Just at Lantern Cast. We also use the hashtag GLCast, so if you just look for that hashtag, if you the type to search by hashtags, then that'll work for you. My other stuff, I've got other stuff that has been on the back burner that I plan to bring back soon. It's just all about managing time and managing what time I have. And I've got a nephew now, and he's only a couple of miles away, so I try to see him as much as I can. So as much as I want to get these other projects more regular, Lantern Cast has become the focus, and everything else we'll bring back in time. But sometime this year, the Action Comics Weekly podcast will be coming back, which I did only 5 episodes of, but I had a different host on for every segment of each issue that I covered. So that's fun wrangling and editing all that.
A lot of herding cats right there.
Yeah. So that's why it only got five episodes in before it went on hiatus, but Action Comics Weekly podcast will be coming back. I'd also do a podcast called Creative Credit. And very briefly, the idea behind that was the Lantern Cast been on the air for so long. I get press passes to local comic cons and things like that, and I meet so many cool people, but then I have to go, wow, man, I love your work. I love your story. Did you maybe ink an issue of Green Lantern in the 80s? Like, do I have an excuse to bring you on air? But Creative Credit, I can talk to anybody from any publisher, from any work, and whether they're an inker, a writer, an editor, the publisher, whatever. I can talk to anybody. In the very first episode of that, I got Steve the Dude Rude. So that helped me splash with a bang. Got 3 episodes of that out, but I really love just talking to creators. And then my Ragman blog, thesuitofsouls.blogspot.com, just chronicling all the appearances of Ragman. So, I really love the character of Ragman. I like characters where they themselves aren't the power. The power is something that happens to them, whether it's a ring from space or an alien symbiote or a suit of souls that they inherit through their legacy, or a magical hammer from Asgard. You know, I like the idea of something falling out of the sky and into your lap that you use the right way to become a hero.
Well said, well said. Well, I'll put links to the social media, everybody, in the show notes, so you can go click there if you're having a hard time finding any of them. Otherwise, go check out the Lantern Cast. You can go to lanterncast.com, or like Chad said, just do a search on whatever podcast platform you use. Search for Lantern Cast and you'll find it. So anyway, Chad, again, thanks for joining me. It's been great to talk to you, and there's tons of great Lantern Cast podcasts out there. So if you're hearing about it, learning about it for the first time, you have literally thousands of hours of podcasts that you can go back and listen to. It's one of the great things about podcasts, especially ones that focus on sort of evergreen content rather than sort of current events. So again, man, thanks for joining me, and best of luck in the future with the Lantern Cast and your other projects.
Thank you so much. And I can't appreciate enough you doing this. It's always fun to have an episode I didn't have to prep for. Just jump on and talk.
So listeners, to you, we want to thank you for listening as always, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.